Hello and welcome to the Soccer Speakeasy. Today is the 27th of January, 2021, Wednesday. As we gear up for a new MLS season, I think they've kind of finally figured it out when it's going to be, which is good news or bad, depending on your perspective. I'm Mike Arace, and with me are the experts. Jacob Myers, our fine crew beat writer, and the man, Kyle Robertson, the striker. We're zooming away here. It's been a little bit. Just generally speaking, Jacob, I'm going to snap my pen a couple times just to raise your hackles and ask you to recap what has gone on during this very brief, this month-long at this point off-season for the Columbus Crew of the SC.
Yeah, they've been busy, and their focus has kind of been on, at least right away, was players inside the league. I think a big impact of that is not being able to see international players in person, so they kind of focused on the free agency, and they made some big moves. So just I'll recap the offseason and give a look at what the roster is looking like right now. 10 players are gone. Hector Jimenez, Andrew Tarbell, Yunus Mokhtar, Fernando Adi, among others. The most recent transaction, the Crew sold Chris Cadden to a Scottish team. So he's going back to Scotland. I think he has ambitions to play for their national team, and he wasn't going to get the time here. So hardly knew him, and he's already back in Scotland. But the big additions were 5 players are in, the big ones being Kevin Molino from Minnesota and Bradley Wright Phillips, who Crew fans are obviously very aware of and have known for a while from his days with Red Bull. But he's coming off a very successful season with LAFC, and the Crew also signed a homegrown Isaiah Parente. He's a midfielder, and then goalkeepers Evan Bush to be the backup, and a fourth goalie in Eric Dick, who's never played an MLS game. So currently there are 25 and 30 roster spots filled. I'll just give a breakdown. You have Aloy Room, Evan Bush, Matt Lampson, and Eric, the goalkeeper. Defenders are Milton Valenzuela, Harrison Offal, Jonathan Mensah, Josh Williams, Vito Wormhoor, Abubakar Keita, Waylon Francis, and Grant Lillard. So they have some space there. They have to add a right back or two. They only have Offal there right now. And then midfielders, Lucas Ellerayon, Pedro Santos, Kevin Molino, Etienne Jr., Luis Diaz, Nagby, Artur, Aiden Morris, Sebastian Berhalter, and Parente. Forwards are Jossi Zardes and BWP and Miguel Bear. So other transactions, they had the draft. They picked a couple defenders who, once they get that reserve team up, that's where they will likely play.
Kyle, Bradley Light, you got BWP and Molino. Bradley Wright Phillips is one of the truly, I don't know if you call it great players in the league, but he will be over time considered one of the more effective players in MLS history. I mean, you just look at the career records that you look at those lists. He's on them. He's at a stage in his career where he can kind of pick and choose, and I'm sure there was a clamor for his services. He in fact chose the Crew, which says something about this team, the way it's run, and obviously coming off a championship.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's huge to add somebody of his talent and his pedigree to the roster. I mean, he's an easy fill-in, you know, up top, or even late game situations when you want to have two strikers up there. So I think it was really smart of the Crew, and I think they have the possibility of playing 40 plus games this year. Plus with all the different qualifying and international stuff. And, you know, so I think it's going to be a year where the depth is truly going to be tested, and you're going to have a variety of players playing, throughout the different lineups throughout the season, depending upon who's gone. And I think Porter finally has that second striker that he always wanted and always talked about, and kind of, the last couple guys didn't quite fit the bill, and I think this guy is it in a more limited role. I mean, I don't think he's going to be playing 20. You know, I mean, you don't hope. I mean, with his age, you know, you. I think if you see him between 10 and 15 games, I think that's a that's a good plan of action moving forward.
I mean, to have a team with Bradley White Phillips coming off the bench in the 60th is a statement. And you know, what did the fans? They called Adi the White Flag. So big upgrade there. Not to pick on Finedo Adi, but Jacob, the Molino acquisition, very interesting. We all know how good this guy is when he's healthy. We saw it last year, up close and personal. He's a hell of a player, and may slot right in there and starting wing. But the acquisition was interesting too. It showed some alacrity by management in that Minnesota had a certain price. It kind of got sniffed out here, and they thought we can make a run at this guy. And this place, this city, and this team is attractive enough where maybe we can get him. And they did. It was a very canny move by the general manager.
Yeah, I mean, it's when I had talked about BWP and Molino with Porter, he was very explicit, and kind of to Kyle's point, they believe they have another starting caliber forward in BWP that can come off the bench or give a push whenever they need to, in addition to those games as well. But with Molino, I mean, strictly statistically speaking, he was one of the best wingers in the league last year. He had 9 goals in the regular season and had 4 games in the playoffs.
Yeah.
He was terrific, but he's a quality player.
Other than Lucas, I would say Molino was the next best player in the postseason, just the way he looked and certainly showed up in big games too. So that's a multi-year deal as well. I believe he's 30 years old, so that's important. If you're looking, you know, Pedro Santos, he had his option exercise after the season. So you think he's coming up on the end of his contract here, and what the Crew want to do there. I think it's clear just with the direction of the league and these moves signify that they'll just continue to add and improve. And it wouldn't be a bad thing to keep a Santos around and come off the bench. But I just say that from the point of now they have an additional starting caliber winger. He should be the starting guy on the right wing with Santos on the left. And this will allow Diaz to come off the bench and be effective. Where I feel like he is most effective as he continues to learn the position.
Kyle, ownership isn't messing around.
No, yeah, no. I think it's truly interesting to have ownership commit to these two guys, and you know, possibly more. You know, it's just weird because Columbus traditionally has always been in the lower third of the league in salary and spending and keeping guys and
lower third.
So I think. Yeah, I mean, okay, bottom three. Okay.
when they played Toronto in 2017, Michael Bradley's salary was about equal to the entire payroll of the Crew. Yeah. So we'll put it that way. I'm sorry to interrupt. Please continue.
No, I just think it's to me it's kind of bizarre to see the Crew adding quality pieces and spending money. At the rate as which they are, it's just, you know, to me they've bumped up a few echelons in the whole salary system of the MLS, and I think Crew fans should be kind of excited that they're spending money. They have owners who are going to put quality people onto the team, and it wasn't just like a magical run that, you know, hey, they made the championship and they won. You know, I think with what they have, you know, moving forward, that, you know, they could possibly be a contender year in, year out.
Jacob, it seems like D and Jimmy like winning, number one and number two. This is obviously an organizational effort to usher in the new era with the new stadium. Where do things stand with that?
Yes, so they had a steel topping out ceremony a few weeks ago. I can't remember the exact date, but it was sometime in January. So they're all done with that part. They're finishing the roof, just putting kind of the paneling on top there. When I was in there, I got to go up to the top with some Haslam Sports Group people and Tim Bezpachenko, Steve Lines, and kind of get a view from the top of the Nordic where you can kind of stand and look out. It's, you know, I think $313 million, it better be impressive. But fans are really going to enjoy just kind of like you feel really over top of the field, and you kind of saw the lighting fixtures, what all that might look like. It's certainly the structure of it is all in place. You can really get a feel what it's going to look like. They recently installed the scoreboard on the south end, which is bigger than the Mafre scoreboard. And I still think it's
my TV in my living room is about the size of the Mafre scoreboard.
You know, one thing I neglected to ask is if it was fireproof, but we can all hope so. I know that's low hanging fruit, Mike. I got to work for that joke a little bit, but the stadium's coming along and July is still their target to open.
Their contractors are showing up on time and this thing, what's the timing, Jacob, is the best you can be determined, because I think that's what people want to know. That's what I'm curious about.
Just for the opening of it?
Yes.
Yeah, so I think right now everything publicly they've said is they're sticking to the timeline they put out there. So it's the field installation begins in April, I believe. It might be late March, but it's around that time frame. It's all on their Crew Stadium website. But June, it's set like late June is all major construction being done. And I assume the kind of next month is just making sure everything is, you know, in tip-top shape, ready for opening. But they're still planning for a July opening. And now we have a MLS schedule, assuming that the CBA negotiations don't totally fall apart. We can start to think when they might open it with that schedule.
Okay. We're going to get to the CBA negotiations in just a second. Jacob, you're the plumber among this crew here at the Speakeasy. Kyle, you're the artist. How did the stadium strike your eye?
No, I drove by it last night on the way to the CBJ game, and you know, I think it's taken form and it truly looks like a stadium, and I think it just looks awesome.
It looks like a stadium. That's our artist, ladies and gentlemen.
That's
like
a good thing.
Well, I mean, for the longest time, it just, you know, the roof wasn't there, and so it's kind of an open kind of, you know. But, you know, I just think it looks pretty awesome, you know, on the backdrop of Columbus when you're going by 670. And, you know, I can't wait to see what it looks like all lit up. And it's going to be I just can't wait. So
what I'm curious about seeing is the pitch of the Nordic. Those fans are going to go straight up and up and be right on top of things. I want to see what that atmosphere is like when we can get some people in the building and, you know, knock wood. Hopefully that's sooner rather than later with the vaccination rollout. So, all right, we should talk next, Jacob, about the schedule. Speaking of schedules, how's that for a brilliant segue, Kyle? What the league has kind of settled on things, or at least announced their plans for how this is going to roll out. Can you give us the latest, Jacob?
Yeah, so preseason camp will begin February 22nd with opening weekend scheduled for April 3rd and 4th. Playoffs would start November 19th with MLS Cup December 11th, which is very similar to this year, although they're hoping for a 34-game schedule like all other seasons, and it doesn't appear to be any kind of regional travel. I would be curious. It's really difficult since, you know, you play 3 games in 8 days at max, so I don't think they can do this, but I like what NHL and NBA has done where, you know, you're in one site and playing 2 games, so you wish they could do that, but it appears that, you know, there might be a trip to LA, Portland, wherever, Austin. So the schedule isn't totally out and released yet, but that's the framework they're working with right now. They're also planning for everything else to kind of be normal, almost acting like this season will be any other season, COVID adjacent, with the All-Star Game, Leagues Cup, Campeones Cup, and the U.S. Open Cup. Also several international competitions, including World Cup qualification, as Cal mentioned. Yeah. So And then you have CONCACAF on top of that, yep. which would start April 6th, 7th, yeah. or 8th. That'll be the crew's first game. So you got it's Gold going Cup to start and, really quickly. Yeah, yeah exactly. And it's good that they added the depth they need for not just for these competitions, but any absences that are caused by COVID as well.
Jacob, what is, and I know you've written about this, but just to go over it one more time, because again, this is one thing I'm interested in and other people are as well. And that is, and we can't be certain about or speak in certain terms about it because, you know, the stadium's still under construction, but the breakdown of games that will be played at the venerable Crew Stadium and how they want, what they want, how many games they want to play and over what sort of span of time in the new stadium.
I know that they are still, the last I heard, what they're still looking at is maximum 13 games in the new stadium. That just might be like difficult because of you have CONCACAF now and other competitions you're balancing, postponements that will inevitably happen this season. So it's very difficult, but I think if all else is equal and the same, that's what they're looking at. I believe it's kind of one game a month that they're looking at having in Mafre before transitioning to the new stadium. So yeah. If you think they could do, if it's a late July opening, for example, you could do like one in April, May, June, July. That would get you your four. And I guess it's no longer Mafre because that deal ended. So we might have to go back to call Old Crew Stadium, if you will. But so that's a framework they're looking at.
I just did, Jacob. It is Old Crew Stadium. And what does that place look like now in terms of obviously they're going to refit that stadium and the training facility is virtually complete?
Yeah, I haven't been by in a while, but training, the construction on the training facility is continuing, and just some renderings that the team has pushed out on their social media page, not renderings, but like live updates on their construction. It appears that the actual facility is just about done. I mean, the fields are starting to be laid. So you really get a sense of what it looks like. The stadium itself, I don't, other than no Mafra Insurance logo, there are no real changes to it. Now, for the new stadium, I know I talked to Bezbachenko about this, that they are trying to do some type of like unveiling of the championship, whatever you call it, the kind of like plaque that they'll put on the face of the building. That'll happen at the new stadium. That's what they're aiming for right now. So any grand ceremony of a grand opening first game, it appears that'll kind of be a part of it. And I know in some renderings, this was interesting, and I actually thought it was just done in the renderings to look cool, but you know that smokestack on the site of the stadium? They are actively trying to test and get like some smoke to be pushed out of there, like on a goal or something, to be a part of the atmosphere, which is in some of the renderings, but I just thought that was a neat little detail.
Now, Jacob, let's get to the increasingly more heated collective bargaining negotiations. As folks will or may not remember, it was a little over a year ago where they signed a new CBA, and then COVID hit, and they sat down in June and modified it, and now you know, as of the end of last month, the league informed the union that that they're going to activate a force majeure clause. And that is up the thermostat in these talks. Give us your best overview about where these things stand and what impact they could have going forward.
Yes. So Thursday, when this pod will come out, that is the 30-day deadline, if you will, from when the league first sent its proposal to MLSPA. And that they can accept, and then after that, the league can then decide to, through the force majeure clause, just totally scrap the CBA and build a new one, or they can agree to extend the deadline and continue negotiations to alter the current framework. Now, that's the 30-day deadline is where it's a little tricky and kind of the this nastiness a little bit has played out publicly. Don Garber has said there has to be a sense of urgency with that deadline, while Bob Foose, the executive director for the MLSPA, said there's nothing legally binding about that 30-day deadline to negotiate a deal. So, like, they are in disagreement on what that deadline appears to be.
What we do know about that deadline for sure is that the MLS can, per the contract, unilaterally, easy for me to say, terminate the current deal, and then things are really, there's a little mushroom cloud there. I'm sorry, but they can do that. Will they do that? What's your take, Jacob?
Yeah, I mean, for the sake of the league, I think it would be just bad to get into these negotiations over and over and over again. So I think you just want to continue to extend the deal and continue talking. I'm not a labor expert here, but all I can say is what the two sides are saying is very, very different. So where it is right now is MLS submitted a proposal. The PA got back with their own, and MLS shot that down pretty quickly, came back with their own. So they're kind of talking about that and in negotiations with the PA. So at least the gears are turning a bit. Who knows where this really ends up? Just to kind of give an idea of what is in these proposals. Bob Foose with the PA, he openly wondered in a press conference, which he called in response to Garber's statements, saying there needs to be a sense of urgency, because he said that wasn't communicated to the PA at all. So in this, Foose said that he openly wondered if MLS is wanting to renegotiate in order to recoup expected losses in 2021, or if they're just doing this for what he called economic opportunity. So then you had on draft day, MLS put out alert, was a clear play to gin up support for the league's efforts in the new proposal, which is extending the CBA through 2027, which would be a concession of the players. And the league said it would pay 100% of players' salaries, while an increase in their salary minimum and maximum would be on hold for 21 and 22. And that was almost framed as a concession that they're willing to pay 100% of player salaries. But on its face, there seems to be no reason not to do that, because they're having them play a full 34-game season. So it is whatever you want to make of it. MLSPA stances, the players have already made a lot of concessions. And Foose said it was disingenuous for Garber to suggest there's no player salary impact. So yeah, I'm sure you have some thoughts on this, Mike.
Well, it feels to me simply like a leverage move and an attempted clawback, and that doesn't make for good labor relations. It seems very heavy-handed to me especially during a pandemic, there should be more of a fostering of a relationship rather than an attempt to destroy it. That's my knee-jerk reaction. Let's wrap up here, gentlemen. We should, before we wrap up and finishing up this discussion of the CBA, I mean, there is a chance the season could be scuttled, depending on how hardline Don Garber wants to be. And with the season would go everything else, including the All-Star Game, the U.S. Open Cup, the League's Cup, the Campione's Cup, and the CONCACAF Champions League. So, yeah, Don Garber's just using all of that for leverage, what looks to me like a clawback. Is the league hurting? Yeah. Is there a better way to do this in conjunction with your players? To me, there's no doubt in my mind. Now, Kyle, I'm going to throw it right at you. Give me your starting 11 for Columbus Crew SCs. Come on. Let's
have your starting
11. And, Jacob, you're going to go next. Okay, you can start in goal.
Room.
That was now the back line, you got to think about obviously Offal's there. We don't know who's behind him yet. But
I think you're going to go Offal, Mensah. I think you're going to go Williams at first until Vito kind of, is a 110% back. And then
there's no such thing as 110%, Kyle. And I'm sure Jacob's keeping up with Vito Warmhorn, and he'll have an update for everyone soon enough, if not already. But anyway, continue. The other side?
Let's see here. I'm drawing a blank. Left side.
Well, they did just re up with Waylon Francis, although he's probably.
Sorry, I'm drawing.
Venezuela.
Yeah, Milton. Sorry, Milton. And then, But I mean, and then I think you go the wings. I think you start with Pedro, you know, and then you have Molino, you know, on the other side, and then you know you got Nagby, Artur, Lucas, and you know Zardes up top. So I think maybe the only is there only really one position open it would be the other center back. Is that the only really?
I think that one is just contingent on, like you said, how Wormhoorn feels. And I actually did talk to him this offseason. He was back in the Netherlands. He spent most of the season away from his family. He told me he and his wife decided to send their kids back there so they could actually go to school in person because their country is prioritizing getting kids in school and actually shutting things down like bars and restaurants, unlike us. But the way he's doing it is he feels good where he's at right now. The last time I talked to him, he said, you know, I just need to like wake up my muscles now being his ankle because he hasn't used them in so long. So he seems content on if he has to miss a little time at the beginning of the season, he's okay to do that. Confident it won't be long if he does have to miss a few games.
As good as Josh Williams was, and boy, he finished the season like a hoss. I mean, through the playoffs.
Best season of his career.
Oh, he was terrific. And I think in light of that, we tend to forget how good the Wormhoorn Mensah center back combination was at the beginning of last season. It was daunting. Jacob, you're starting 11.
I would say we haven't seen enough of Wormhoorn. He played 93 minutes, I think. He missed the Seattle game before the league halted everything. And then,
if you have a good eye for talent like Kyle does, you would have recognized how good the man truly is.
He is good, for sure. I just think I am going to wait a little longer to see how they work together. But, okay. Yes, if he's healthy, he's the starter. Then it's awful in Valenzuela, Nagby and Artur, Santos, Zelarayan, Molino, and Zardes up top. And I think one good thing, other than you know the main thing that the crew won, if you're the crew that came out of MLS Cup, is you know you have a good backup central midfielder and Aiden Morris now who's capable of stepping in there when need be. Because remember, that was kind of a question mark through at least the first half of the year. And clearly Morris stepped up when he needed to. And I think that allows them to just, okay, we're good with our homegrowns now to kind of back up where need be if Artur or Nagby need to go out.
Kyle, what did Tortorella say about Werenski after he got hit in the face with the puck and came back? He's got balls the size of the building.
Building, yeah.
Aiden Morris has a little of that in him.
Yeah.
You know, Jacob, last thing, you guys have both talked about the need to add depth at back. It's the one glaring need. Anything rumbling there, and what sort of time frame are we looking at in terms of acquisitions?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, let's just do the math now. It's a month, a little less than a month until camp starts, assuming that the CBA is underway. So they definitely have some gears rolling there. And I don't know the players that they have been targeting. One rumor that was out there, just in terms of an Eastern Conference MLS team that's offered him, was U.S. international DeAndre Yedlin. Now, what just from kind of hearing around is, and obviously he has the background with Porter at Akron, so I think the connections there were pretty obvious. But the dude's making $3 million at Newcastle. I don't think he's going to take a 66% pay cut to come to MLS. So I would hold off on that for a bit. He'll probably make his money for now. But there was rumors of a winger from Colombia, 22-year-old. It doesn't appear that the crew is going to be one of those teams. I haven't heard anything myself. I've just followed these rumors that have come out of Colombia, and it seems like there might be an MLS deal for this player, but it's to one of the newer franchises. So would have been a significant additional investment that I think the ownership and the team is willing to make, but I don't know if that's a spot they're looking at right now.
What do we have, or what's the Cruz international? Are they filled with their internet, or what's open? Was it the under 22 DP or whatever, and then what, some international slots?
Yeah, so there's not a ton of clarity on that 22 player. I know what you're talking about. So in the last CBA, the league and the players union agreed to this kind of additional pool of money that is almost like a young DP, but it's like a separate designation. So it allows teams essentially to spend more for younger talent if they want to. I don't know the total logistics with that, but yes, there are international spots open. I'm trying to just kind of count looking at their roster right now. But last I looked with the Chris Cadden move, he leaving, they had at least two international spots open. If not three, because Yunus Mokhtar was one as well, and he's gone, and they didn't fill any. So, yeah, there is plenty of room to add international talent.
All right, gentlemen, anything else?
I talked to Bradley Gray Phillips.
Go ahead.
I got to plug my work, Mike.
Go ahead, Shield.
I talked to Bradley Wright Phillips earlier this week just about his decision to come to Columbus and hoping to do that with Molino here soon, and he talked about, and Kyle and I were kind of texting this, he talked about he feels like he's still chasing a year because of 2019. He felt like it was almost a reset and people didn't believe he could produce anymore given his age. He's 35, will be 36 this season, but he seems heavily motivated, and he said he's admired Porter and Nagby for a while. So give that a read on dispatch.com and anything Mike writes as well. It's always worth it.
Oh yeah, sure. Pander now. What I'm looking forward to is the photo gallery. Kyle can shoot the new stadium at sunrise and maybe Adam Cairns at sunset. I'd scroll through that, Kyle. Just an idea. And I guess that's it here. We'll end on a specious idea, I suppose. For today, Wednesday, the 27th of January, 2020. That's our edition of the Soccer Speakeasy. For young Jacob Myers and Kyle Robertson, thank you for joining us. I'm Mike Arace, and Patrick Flaherty, wherever you are, kick us out of here, please.